Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello and welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. We come to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and of course the arts, in a way that encourages everyone to think for themselves so the best possible political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, the Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. I'm Marcello Rolando, your host, and our guest today is Judy Robinson, who is the VICAP Coordinator and Financial Wellness Specialist at JABA. Her duties include helping older adults and their families navigate Medicare Part D reviews, benefits applications, plan reviews for marketplace insurance, and reverse mortgage counseling. In other words, she's a great help to tell you what you need to do to get the most out of life and especially retirement. But today, we're going to talk to her about what most of us call Obamacare, which is actually officially known as the Affordable Care Act. Good morning, afternoon, and good day, Judy Robinson. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to talk to you again. And I think I've given the folks some idea of all that you do, but not completely, because you do a lot. But first of all, you're now helping people understand the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, so that they know what to do to navigate not only the website, but the other means of getting coverage. And I guess we should, first of all, that's a yes or no question, I suppose. You do that, yes?
Yes, we did that.
And then let us begin with who is eligible. If someone calls you or gets on your website or walks into your office and asks these questions, who is eligible? That's probably
okay.
One of their first questions.
Yeah, well, that is part of the website. Once it's up and running, it's going to actually be sort of a sorting zone because people can go in there and put their information in, and it'll show whether they're eligible for Medicare or they're eligible for Medicaid or, you know, so that does function as a sorting mechanism. But we do that here, and when people come in and they are not eligible for staying on their parents' plan any longer, they don't have access to health insurance through their workplace, and they're not yet eligible for Medicare, then those people that don't have access to insurance in those other routes are the target group for the Affordable Care Act marketplace.
I see. And you counsel and help individuals as well as families navigate the new system.
Uh-huh. Right.
And go ahead.
We do individuals and families actually apply together so that they maximize their tax credits and cost sharing and that sort of thing.
Tell us, it may seem obvious to some, but explain to us tax credits and cost sharing. What does it mean exactly?
Well, the Affordable Care Act provides tax credits that are sort of work like the earned income credit does. You can take a portion of it throughout the year to help you pay your premiums, or you can get all or part of it at the end of the year for a tax refund. So that system's going to work very much like the earned income credit works, and you will be able to, as I said, take all or part of it throughout the year and then get the rest of it when you file your tax refund. And the cost sharing is there are funds that will be used to actually help you pay your copays. So when you have insurance, you pay your premiums, And then even when you go to the doctor, it doesn't mean the whole thing is covered. You'll still have a little copay that you have to pay. And the cost-sharing funds are used to help people in the right income range actually pay those copays as well.
I see. That's very good. There's so much, you know, just so much controversy, and people, not only are there problems, but people making up problems that aren't there, you know, politically and in the media, et cetera. Do you get many people coming in with complaints, or they're just saying, please help me, I need to understand this?
Most of what I see are just people wanting to know how it's really going to work and if it's something that they want to get involved in the first place, you know. So it is, it's not really most people who are going to be kind of anti-Affordable Care Act probably wouldn't come to we're doing
to learn about it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but the good thing about what you and your team provides is that people, whether they like or don't like it, they get information so
right.
they can make an informed decision.
Too, because people, they kind of have a sneaking suspicion that it's actually a good thing, but they hear so much negativity, they're a little shy, you know, of asking about it. And then once we start talking about it and they hear that, oh, yeah, they're right, it actually is kind of a good thing, they're very happy about it.
Very good. What are so they may come in with a frown or a wrinkled brow, but they leave smiling. Would you say
well,
that?
That's our goal. That's certainly our goal.
Okay. Excellent. Tell us today. I know there are three components that make up mm-hmm. the Affordable Care Act. Can you describe them or name them and sort of tell us about them, each of them?
Certainly. Yep. One plank of it is the reform of the healthcare delivery system. To try to, or I should say improvement, not really reform, but improvement of it, to make it more efficient, to avoid redundancy. So, you know, because a patient will go in and see their doctor and they'll get some blood test, and then, you know, if they have some reason they're admitted to the hospital that weekend, then maybe the same blood tests get done. And if we can have some kind of shared database between healthcare providers, we can avoid some of that redundancy and make the system more efficient and more cost effective. The second plank is to improve the efficacy of the insurance industry and make sure that a certain amount, the ACA provides that a certain amount of the money that is collected by insurance companies as premiums goes to actually paying out claims rather than going to administrative costs or, advertising or something, you know, something like that. So it's intended to make the insurance companies more efficient about how they provide payment for claims. And then the third plank, and this is the one that, you know, kind of rankles with people, is the mandate that all of us have to have some form of insurance, and mm-hmm. that's been probably the stickiest issue. And the thing about that is that it's really it's not ironclad. There's a number of different ways that you can have a waiver that you can get out of getting a penalty for it. And frankly, I think that the penalty won't even be necessary. Once people see how this works and what it does for them, they will they'll want to enroll on its merits and not just because they don't want to get a penalty, you know. And there are hardship waivers. Because Virginia didn't expand its Medicaid service, that's an automatic waiver basis for us here in Virginia. And there are religious objection waivers that you can get. So there's lots of different ways. It's not really meant to be something that's going to punish an already struggling family, you know, with the penalty. And, you know, so I think that's been kind of overemphasized.
So what it sounds like, and again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, and we're not really necessarily passing judgment or politically or otherwise, but it sounds like to me you're saying once the glitches work out on the website, this sounds like a pretty good deal that has been formulated.
It is for a lot of people. There are some people, like, you know, because Virginia didn't expand its Medicaid, there are actually people that are at under 100% of poverty level that are going to be paying the same for their premiums as somebody that's 500% of poverty level. And because the Affordable Care Act was designed to have a certain hierarchy on it, and Virginia just didn't bring the bottom up to meet it, essentially. And so those people, they're the ones that are disappointed, you know, because they, you know, should be getting some help, and they're among the most needy in the state, and yet they're not going to get it, you know, with this. So, you know, at least at this point, I think we're on the right track with the Affordable Care Act, and I think that all the things that are going to be problems with the Affordable Care Act as it stands now are just going to be made clear that there are problems and that we need to do something about those things. So it'll be, it'll be longer coming, but I do think it sort of points up the problems and where the weaknesses are and what we need to work on.
All right, so Virginia, the Commonwealth, hasn't stepped up to the plate in a way that helps support the people on the lower end, but it's our hope. And for that matter, that reminds me of DARS, D-A-R-S.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what that is and how they mix into making this work in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Okay. DARS is the Department of Aging and Rehabilitative Services in Virginia, and they work, that's really the overseeing group for both the area agencies on aging, which the Jefferson Area Board for Aging, where I work, that's an area agency on aging. VICAP is also part of a nationwide network of other insurance counseling agencies. Each state has one. And each state has a whole network of the area agencies on aging. And then the Department of Aging and Rehabilitative Services, located in Richmond, is the group that oversees all of the VICAPs and the area agencies on aging. So their main concern is mostly with Medicare services and the Medicaid services, but it's Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are the part of Health and Human Services that's actually overseeing the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. So it's all kind of worked in there, and different parts of the organization have different responsibilities in it. But it's a group effort.
So DARS is kind of the state umbrella over which or under which whatever JABA and ICAP operate.
Right.
But all the dots are connected, and when they are, that benefits the public most. Yes.
That's the hope, is that we provide a safety net over the whole state, so that there's always, wherever you are in the state, an area agency on aging and a Virginia Insurance Counseling Assistance Program office that you can contact and get help with those issues that you need help with.
Okay, so we're going to go to a break in about a half a minute or so, and when we come back, we'll let people know where they, at least Virginians, where they can get in touch with you and to get this assistance. But I'm just wondering, to the best of your knowledge, I know you know Virginia best, but there are other states that are stepping up to make all of this Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, work more efficiently, even before the federal government fixes the website.
Right.
That true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Maryland, California, there's a number of states that Virginia is what they call a federally facilitated exchange, which means that the federal government is running the whole marketplace exchange here. The state government chose not to. Well, I think they're sort of partnering with it now, but they didn't really get in and design their own like some of the other states did.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Ladies and gentlemen out there, we're with Judy Robinson, who obviously knows a great deal about the Affordable Care Act and is waiting for those in Virginia, at least, to ask their questions and get them answered so they know how to proceed. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. This is Marcello Rolando, the host of The Reasonable Voice, with my guest, Judy Robinson.
When you walk into a hospital, you can feel the sense of care. That's why I want a woman who is a nurse. She will care for me twice as much. You can hear it in her voice, see it in her eyes, feel it in her touch. You ask why I say twice as much. Because I feel that women naturally care. By nature, they nurture. They naturally nurse, attend to wounds, bandage appendages with tenderness and mercy. With tender hearts, they tend and attend to hurts and hurting. Why do you think they're given the title of attendant? Because they are attentive with intensive care. That's what I want. Intensive care. I want somebody to care. I want someone to give a care, like a caregiver, like a caretaker. I'll be a caretaker because I'll take all the care I can get.
And that was our spoken word artist, poet, spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, and we're back with Judy Robinson, who is a coordinator of financial wellness specialist at BICAP and also with JABA. Now, we are in Virginia with Judy Robinson, and I guess right away, so people have time, I hope they got their pens and paper during the break. Can you tell us, Judy, how does one get a hold of you and your team to ask questions via website, telephone number, street address? Let us know how we can benefit from your knowledge.
Okay. My line, the line for people to call about insurance questions is 434-817-5239. And our website is www.jabacares.org. And we're located on Hillsdale Drive in Charlottesville. And we have a number of satellite offices also throughout our planning district in Louisa, Fluvanna, Greene County, and Nelson County.
Excellent. And just one more time, if you will, Judy, the telephone number?
434-817-5239.
Thank you so much. Now, tell us, Judy, this you working there, are you get badges that you earn as navigators and certified application counselors? Tell us about that.
Right. There's more than two, but there are two sort of main groups of counseling counselors, and one is the Navigator program, and that's a federally funded program that Legal Aid Justice Center is the navigator for our area. The certified application counselors, that's JABA's designation, and we can help people with, you know, plan comparisons and getting their applications in online, that sort of thing. Now, the navigators will help small businessmen and women get coverage for their employees on the marketplace, and they also have English as a second language capacity counselors and counselors for people with disabilities.
That's excellent. And just to be clear, is there a fee for this counseling when come in to get the?
Okay. No, there's no
fee. I
knew
fee. Not.
And even, you know, that people can even go to brokers. You know, brokers will help people enroll in the plans brokers are not required to be totally non-biased like the navigators and the certified application counselors are, but they are required to show people all of the different plans that they qualify for. So the broker doesn't charge the client either. The broker is reimbursed through the insurance company. So even if they find, you know, an independent agent to help them with it, there won't be a charge to them, but they won't necessarily get 100% unbiased counseling at a broker.
As they would get coming to an organization.
Navigators
such as
or the, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Certified yeah. Application Counselor, yes.
Right.
This is grand. So there really is very little excuse to be making accusations or even opinions without it being informed, because the information is there as long as you know where to go and you can get online or make a telephone call or make an appointment and come in to see you.
Mm-hmm.
You can get the information and it's not one size fits all, it sounds like to me, for sure.
No. There are in Virginia there are 209 different plans. And there
wow.
And yeah. So they you know, everybody's heard the bronze, silver, gold, platinum levels, but even within those levels there are, you know, sub levels there are several different companies involved, you know, selling different plans. So there's a lot to choose from. Maybe not 209 in any given area, but throughout the state, you know, there's a lot of different plans. So and they are intended to tailor to the individual needs of the consumers.
So when someone comes in, I guess your team has been trained. You ask the questions to get what you need to ascertain how to educate them, in what direction
mm-hmm.
to point them.
Right.
So it's not a daunting task if they're trying to go through over 200 different plans, but
right.
because they answer questions from you, you can choose that half a dozen or dozen from which to say these are the ones we want you to explain to you because they are the ones for which you most qualify and are best
mm-hmm.
suited. Is
right.
that
yeah.
it?
Well, you know, ultimately the software is going to do all of that for us. You know, once it's up
uh-huh.
and running, and that process, it's supposed to be, you know, the one door policy. You know, where you come in and the application online will triage people to wherever they need to be.
Yes.
If somebody comes in or they're sitting at home and they're typing in their information and they, you know, didn't know that they qualify for Medicare, you know, the system's supposed to tell them that, you know, you need to, you know, enroll in Medicare, you know. So it's supposed to funnel people where they need to be. And if it's not the marketplace, it's supposed to tell them where. You know, if it's a, you know, a Medicaid qualified individual or, you know, CHIP or FAMIS, and wherever they're supposed to be, the system's supposed to, you know, get them there.
Sure, that is great. Just briefly about Medicare, we're in the, what do they call it, the open season?
Yeah,
open enrollment.
Yeah.
And how long does that go last?
It's October 15th to December 7th, and we're doing prescription drug plan reviews here at JABA for people. And the prescription drug plan reviews are really important to do. I heard a statistic the other day that only 5% of Medicare beneficiaries have the most cost-effective plan for their particular prescriptions, because the drug plan drug plans don't work the way most insurance works. Most insurance, if you pay a little bit more for your premium, then you get a little bit better coverage. These plans work on a formulary. There are three vertical groups of drugs and three horizontal tiers of prices. So it looks like a tic-tac-toe board. And the rule is that each company has to put a certain number of drugs from each group in each tier. But it's up to the companies which ones. And so you can have a particular drug that in one plan is a tier one, very inexpensive drug. In another plan, it may not be on the formulary at all, so that the client is paying full price for it. So it's really important. There's 30 different ones in our area, and the annual cost for them varies by thousands of dollars. So it's really important to check them against your prescriptions and make sure you're in the right one.
Okay, so, and I know we said this at the top of the show, but just to be clear, what we're saying here is that not only can you help advise and counsel people for Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, but you, of those who are 65 who do not qualify or not covered by the new Affordable Care Act, have Medicare, and you can advise them on that as well.
Yep, we try to be a one-stop shop.
All right. Excellent. Before we go, Judy, you've been grand. I just want to talk a little about the people who are, say, under 40 years old. Obviously, the way insurance works, any insurance, is that there have to be enough people paying into it at an earlier age or younger age so that when the older need it, the money is there, and just so the young people don't feel they're being used for that, there are not everybody lives to be old. There are accidents, there are unexpected deaths and illnesses, even in young people. Let's talk to the young people for a while here and explain to them why they need to find someone like you and educate themselves about the benefits to them for the from the Affordable Care Act.
Right. Well, you know, and it is true, you know, younger people who they don't own something, they don't have a lot of money, you know, so they don't feel like health insurance is really something, it's not a priority for them. But the problem is that, you know, God forbid you should be in an accident or have a serious illness and rack up some kind of big debt, because you could end up never being able to own something. You may have your wages garnished for, you know, decades if you have some big and I think one of the things I talk with people about is think of health insurance, because everybody says, oh, if I didn't have it, I'd be paying less, you know, out-of-pocket medical expenses than if I do have it. But the thing about it is you have to kind of think of it as a savings program. It's like a savings account, and you're saving up against the time when you do need it, and then it'll be there for you. And it may not cover all of your costs. You may still have a big deductible with your plan and, you know, a big out-of-pocket maximum, but it's going to be a lot less than if you had the full hospital bill that you had to pay. So so those are the things to keep in mind, is that, you know, a debt will follow you. It'll ruin your credit. It'll prevent you from getting a mortgage. It'll, you know, it'll, you can actually have your wages garnished. The other is that you just want to kind of think of it as preparing for the future and saving up against something that, you know, sooner or later each one of us will need it, you know, and that's kind of that's kind of the way you, it's a better way to think about it. And there are, with the Affordable Care Act, there's going to be a number of policies that are catastrophic coverage only, that are very low premium plans, very high out-of-pocket spending, but it'll prevent you from getting in that kind of situation where you just have such an enormous debt that you would have a really hard time ever getting out from under it.
Well, I appreciate you explaining that, and we're all reaching out for young adults as well to listen, to hear this, because, you know, the next moment is not guaranteed. As my grandmama used to say, you have two choices. You either get old or you die before you get old. And I don't want to be, you know, wishing any ill on anyone, but, you know, there are people who drink and drive and are not the only victims of their behavior, or texting and driving, or sports accidents. There are a lot of things that can happen to young people, and they just need to, you know, not out of fear, but as you say, as a thinking ahead, plan ahead. We all get there one day if we're lucky, and that's the plan. Well, it has been absolutely incredible. Let's just one more time give that telephone number, if you would, Judy, just so people know.
Okay.
In Virginia at least, they know where they can call and get the information they need to make a wise decision about health care. And that number is?
434-817-5239.
And for those right in Charlottesville, Virginia, the land address is?
674 Hillsdale Drive. Charlottesville, Virginia.
22901. Excellent. Thank you so much, Judy. Everyone,
thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. This has been Judith L. Robinson of JAPA. I don't know if we ever explained what JAPA is. Jefferson Area
Board for Aging.
Board for Aging. And we're all doing that. Oop, there goes another moment of aging. Okay.
There you go.
Thank
exactly.
you so much. We're
all right,
going
thank
to,
you.
We're going to say goodbye to Judy, and we're going to break for another spoken word by Mr. Bernard Hankins, and then we'll be back to discuss the health plan and health in general in the U.S. with our panel of reasonable voices. Thank you again, Judy, and bye now.
Thank
take
you.
Care
bye-bye.
Of me. Say take care when I leave. Be careful, carefully, care fully for me like therapy. Be kind and patient. Patience, patience. Listen with your heart. Listen to my heart with your cold stethoscope on my bare chest. Your career is to caress, soothe, cure, care to my core. Listen to me breathe with your stethoscope. With every breath there's hope. Your concern, your consolation, helping with death to cope. Your heart is precious, tender, understanding, carrying my burden, listening carefully, intently, your head nodding, never adding a word in. You care for patients, patient care with hospitality.
Well, we're here with our panelists, the Reasonable Voices, panelists of Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner and Bernard Hankins and myself, Marcello Rolando. We've just heard that there are people trying to do positive things to help people understand and become a part of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Not terribly long ago, we ended a shutdown, 16-day shutdown of the government with still Senator Ted Cruz and others coming out, and at the end of every sentence, the culprit of all things evil in America was Obamacare. It's nice now to see that there are people who are saying, you know, let's try and make the thing work. And then if it doesn't work, well, we can fix it. So we're going to talk now about JABA and how they are responding to the public's need to know. And we're going to talk about from our individual perspective. We're quite an eclectic group here. What do we know about, think about, feel about, fear about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act? You want to kick us off, Bernard?
Yeah, I think I did a workshop with Lighthouse, which works with kids, and I think it was with JABA. We actually interviewed some of the older people who were there at the center, and it was interesting because you had ladies in their 60s who were on Facebook and texting, and they realized that, oh, when I called my grandchildren, they didn't respond. But when I texted them, they got right back to me. So I learned how to text. I learned how to get on Facebook, and it became this whole new platform by which they could communicate with their family. And I thought that was interesting. So to me, that's the angle I come at it from, because, you know, you hear what's going on with the Obamacare now and how people are talking about the website and problems with the website. So to me, you know, it's interesting to see the generations connecting through technology and the fact that if somebody did need to use this, there are people are probably thinking, well, what about the older people who need to get on your internet? Well, a lot of them are getting on the internet.
That's right. That's an excellent point. I think media and government don't give Americans the credit that they can solve troubleshoot and figure things out a good deal of the time if they're given the chance. Of course, if they turn off the television. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I think that this whole idea of
in Charlottesville, having a place where people are getting educated about Obamacare is, you know, necessary. I've been receiving some letters. I have a job with UVA as a temp, and you know, all of the UVA employees will be affected by, you know, Obamacare. And so receiving letters about the marketplace and making decisions about it, it seems almost strange and a little bit confusing. Sometimes the language there is a little bit confusing on what exactly that's going to mean for people. But it is there's been this interesting kind of re-educating of people on what healthcare is and what it's going to look like. And I think that this could be a very unique thing where we're seeing how policy is being engaged with because of technology and because of, you know, new ways to speak with politicians. Just the other day, this doesn't directly have to do with Obamacare, but I was seeing how there were politicians who were having, you know, actually Skyping and Google hanging out with citizens who had questions. And so I think that's a fascinating thing. I think there's still a lot of questions that Obamacare raises, but there does seem to be these outlets, or sorry, I should say avenues for learning more about it.
And Daniel?
Well, even if you've read Obamacare, you don't have a clue what it says because of the way it's done. You need individuals to educate the people. In fact, there is probably a very small group, small percentage of the country that knows what Obamacare means and what it will do, especially the people arguing against it and especially the people arguing for it. Unfortunately, we do have a problem today where there is a great challenge for educating people about very complicated matters because of the nature of television, the nature of the internet, the nature of tweet, it's very possible that our brains have been rewired in such a way that we're not very able to comprehend very complex matters, and we have no attention span in any way whatsoever. So I think for this group, there's going to be a very significant challenge on trying to get across to people something that takes a lot of thought, a lot more thought than a book like War and Peace, which takes a lot of thought because we're dealing with a very complex matter. And second, I think it's unbelievable. I think it's very important for people to know what is in the bill now so that they can pay attention to what it is changed into or people try to change it into later, whether they be conservative or liberal. Because, I mean, this has happened many times where something gets passed, nobody knows what's in it, and then 20 years it's for something totally different. And I think that's one of the reasons why education is very important in a democracy, so that people can keep up and check and balance their government administrators. I mean, the government passes the Patriot Act. That means one thing, and then 5 months later, there's a whole other barrage of things that are included in it. And I say that, too, keeping in mind that just because Obamacare is about the healthcare system doesn't mean somebody can't slip in something about oil drilling. I mean, it's unfortunately bills now are just a blank slate for anyone to insert anything they want. So we need to be educated now about what's in it so we can see if some politician in the future attempts to do something like that and stop it.
You make so many good points, Daniel, not the least of which is the first responder that is so devalued or not appreciated are teachers, and that's teachers in the classroom and teachers in the family room. You know, the people who understand the value of explaining, so that no matter what age you are, what experience you are, when something is new, when something is a change, Americans have always, we all think we're so progressive, but there's always been a resistance to change. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's human nature because it isn't, but it is. There is a good chunk of we the people who going wait, not so fast. And frankly, I think we need the wait, not so fast people to be like the weights and a clock to keep us. And I am I'm left of center. I'm not far left, but I'm left of center. But I like the balance of having a more conservative voice say, wait a minute, let's look at this. When that voice becomes, wait a minute, let's not even consider it, and it's the worst thing, then that's not being conservative. That's something else. But I think we need to teach and to be taught. And the second point I want to make, then we'll pass it along, is I'm not old enough to remember, but I certainly have studied history. And there have been many things in America's history that when they are first introduced, including Medicare,
and Medicaid, and food stamps, and child care, and, you know, so many things. When they first come out, people resist that change. But I do fear, to my last point, what Daniel was saying, I've felt for a long time that if we get all of our information from the television, or even the internet, if that's our only source, as opposed to talking and listening to each other like this, then we lose the ability to think for ourselves.
Yes.
Jump in, anybody.
Well, you know me, I'm going to go to what the words mean.
That's good.
To me, the word care is very interesting. And I'll give you one of my favorite things in hip-hop is when somebody takes a word and it's used against them, and then they take it right back and use it against the person who used it against them. So Obama had this great moment where he said, you know, people are talking a lot about Obamacare.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I do care. Obama does care. I was like, okay, Obama, you had a nice little word flip. Nice. But to me, the thing that I find interesting is, again, health care. Think about how that word is thrown around so often, and it becomes this issue that people talk about to the point where the word no longer has meaning. And we need more health care. And what about health care? I was like, do you realize what those two words are meaning? Health and care. But how often do we actually talk about health and care as separate entities that actually mean something, the health of people, and actually caring? Care. So to me, that gets into deeper things about, it's not just about passing a bill or what do you think about Obamacare, but how do we run hospitals to begin with? Why is it so hard to get health and care? Why is it such a problem that you get sick and you're like, oh my goodness, I wonder if I can pay for this?
Yeah.
You know, if it's supposed to be something that's that important to us, then why is it so hard to begin with that we have to pass millions of pieces of paper to get it done? And one of my favorite commercials is like, it used to be these little phones, I can't remember the brand, but it was like, what if firemen ruled the world? And so all of them were on their phone, and he's like, okay guys, we got 100 pages of legislation that tells we need clean water. We need clean water? Yes. What about taxes? One page or less? So, you know, just that kind of mentality that we're even in the place where we have to talk about the fact that we need this thing.
Why are we so focused on healthcare means getting fixed once you are in bad health as opposed to preventing bad health to begin with?
That's a major issue.
Well, I just want to say, you know, really quick on, you know, Bernard's point. I think that's, you know, when I was talking about receiving these letters on, you know, the marketplace and sort of what's going to have to be decided upon for healthcare, you know, I think that it raises a confusion, not simply because, oh, I don't understand what that sentence meant, but more the sense of, now I'm going to be given certain, you know, guidelines and criteria of what I need to make a decision about. And it's more the sense that it's kind of like when you go to, you know, you have a checkup and the doctor says something's wrong with you. Well, how are you to dispute it? You haven't gone to medical school. And I think there can be a way in which we don't always trust our own selves to think well and to critically think. So sometimes we just think, well, you know, that's what the government decided, so okay, and you know, I guess I'll have to, you know, go along with it, and you know, there's, you know, certainly the government has a lot of information on, you know, things we don't have. But at the same time, in terms of understanding what Obamacare is, there can be this sense where the government becomes this sort of doctor, you know, and then it's kind of like, oh, well, we just have to, you know, take the doctor's order, because what do we know? And then I don't think, you know, we don't just get that, like, believing what the government says, but what does everyone else say about the government? You see, so it's not just, okay, Obamacare, two thumbs up, but it's like we go to some sort of politicized voice, and then that's where we're like, because they know better, you know, but we forget that we have to think about it ourselves.
To the point, arguably a personal trainer should be paid more than a doctor, because a personal trainer keeps you from getting sick. A doctor treats you once you're sick. But personal trainers tend to not make their parents but so proud, but if you say you're going to med school, you get a bunch of pats on the back, which then has a sense where the society then values reaction versus preparation, and that's a problem in itself. And that's shown in our political theater. It's very reactionary rather than critically thinking. To a point you made, Marcello, you do need people with different views in order to have a dialectic relationship of determining truth. The problem today is that we view the other side as an enemy, not a method by which we can perfect ourselves through.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we look at things, we go, who's going to win, rather than what's best.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetically, you know, let's say the Obamacare is a disaster. Well, then both Democrats and Republicans should be against it. Let's say Obamacare is a success. Then both Republicans and Democrats should be for it. Who proposed it is irrelevant. It should be, does it work and is it good? But that's not what we talk about. We talk about who's going to win. And consequently, that has a very dramatic effect on our ability to critically think. And also, what it does is if I'm a Democrat and a Republican speaking, I say he's the enemy. So I'm not going to listen to anything he's saying, and vice versa. And so then what ends up happening is our inability to listen to one another is translated into our legislation, which tends to be poorly crafted and full of pork and full of little caveats that have terrible implications that we don't know about. And therefore, we need education in order, and people are going to educate you to think in a synthetic way, not a Democrat or Republican way. But again, for those who are going to educate the people about Obamacare, they're going to have a significant challenge, because in the very act of doing that, you will be associated with liberal and Democrat, and therefore people who are more conservative-leaning will not listen to you, just because they associate you with that. And I think that has very big implications for the country as a whole, that we do that to one another.
I certainly don't disagree with anything you've said. I'm hoping, though, and I choose to believe that an organization, the further you get away from politicians, the better, but an organization like JABA, operating in a community like Charlottesville, Albemarle County, I think we'll get a broader range, political range, if you will, of people walking into that door or getting on that website and getting their answers. Because JABA is simply saying, you come to us, you're trying to become a part of the new health law, how can we help you? And people ask their questions, and I don't think JABA has a political agenda, but there's no getting away from even Obamacare or Affordable Care Act or whatever you want to call it, is a product, it is a political product, but it's also an insurance health industry corporation product. It's not like they stood on the sidelines and went, okay, Mr. President, what do you want? He had to make a lot of compromises, and compromise isn't a dirty word, but it isn't... It's as good as it's going to prove to be for the most people who need it and want it.
Oh, and I, just to add, I do not mean to claim the organization has a left-leaning. What I'm saying is that people, in a way, have become so cynical in their thinking that they automatically associate certain educators with that, which then provides another hurdle for those educators that wish them the best in overcoming.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, you know, perhaps it's not, oh, you know, people won't listen to what they're saying simply because they might be left-leaning because they're instructing or teaching about Obamacare, but rather, I mean, I think that the educators have a challenge because it's not simply about education, but about critical thinking. It's not just about you know, here's your syllabus. It's about what is it, you know, and that kind of going back to, you know, what Bernard is talking about. You know, healthcare is a part of all of our health, and, you know, our thankfulness for it, or whatever you want to say, is a part of our own lives. You know, so it's I think there's this interesting challenge when it comes to any form of education, but when it comes to educating on Obamacare, where it's not just a simply, here, let me force feed you, but more of, here are the building blocks, what are you going
to
make?
And what do you want to make?
And what do you want to make, exactly.
And it's something that me and Daniel have talked about a lot, is like, you know, how much have we given over to the government? And I think as we're sitting here talking about this, I'm thinking about health, and I just like, why is the government even talking about health? Like, that's something that you're supposed to do for yourself, number one. But number two, it's like, why is this like a political issue? To me, it's been kind of hijacked to where now it's like, we have this thing, and you know you need to be healthy.
Yeah.
And there are people sitting there like, you're right, I need to let you go ahead and do that for me. And it's just really ridiculous because, I mean, I guess the reason that got me on that is if you think about health overall, you have to really think about, well, what is that? It's my ability to be healthy. It's kind of hard to explain health without saying healthy, you know, defining the word with the word. But you want to be healthy so you can do what? Go to work and create the economy and create all those jobs that people talk about and take care of your family and do all the things that you like. So it goes much deeper than just us talking about health care, but I think it's realizing that health is something that we need to kind of like step back and pull away. Like, wait a minute, give me that back. Mm-hmm. Let me deal with this versus right. allowing you to like put all these like ties and strings and pieces of paper on top. Okay, now here's healthcare and I'll decipher it.
But here's the point. If we've got a nation with an epidemic obesity problem, I'm not saying the government, I don't believe the government is the answer to everything. And generally, again, corporations are people up there making certain decisions, and mm-hmm. government mm-hmm. is a bunch of people, mm-hmm. not just politicians, who are making choices and decisions, and you know, and we're all sort of living with them. We are a part of the problem and the solution. But I hear what you're saying. I just wonder, and I think we hear more from people just because whoever speaks the loudest is the one the media goes after. We hear more from the people who are against Obamacare than who are for it. So what I'm pleased to hear that there's any organization mm-hmm. in Charlottesville or anywhere saying, come to me and let me answer your questions and show you and explain if you want, and that there are people responding to that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing, which has nothing to do with politics or anything, except some people are coming trying to find out, and they need help to find out. I think most of the people who talk, as Daniel said earlier, most of the people who talk about, except for the four of us in this room, who talk about Obamacare know very little about it. When I to prepare for the show today, when I went in to do some studying myself, I went, holy smoke. I mean, I wonder if people even know. I mean, they have said a lot about this lately, but do you even know that if you're over 55, Obamacare isn't for you anyway? Was it 65? You know, because then you've got Medicare and so forth. So there are a lot of unknowns that go beyond what the politicians are saying. You want to jump
well,
in?
I was just going to say, a problem is... one, healthcare and health are different things. When the government takes, you know, healthcare to lower costs, and we associate with, well, now I don't have to take care of health, that's where the problem can emerge. And that does happen, unfortunately, because in our minds, when we're so focused on healthcare, we're thinking negatively. We're thinking on fighting rather than proactively keeping us from being in
going
that situation. And two, our very constructive metaphors. We say a war against cancer, a battle against cancer. So when we get sick, we have a metaphor structure in our mind that makes us set up to lose. And third, when it comes to something like the Obamacare, and many of the legislations coming out with these great unknowns, it reminds me of the Hawthorne story, The Black Veil, which is the idea a guy walks into a town wearing a black veil. No one can see his face. He won't take it off, and it just terrorizes them. It destroys the entire community when all the guy's doing is wearing a black
veil.
Yeah. Because in many respects, the Obamacare is like that. Something enters the community, the civilization, which in a way is wearing a black veil, of which education removes. But then we have to engage in education to remove that black veil, which terrorizes all of us. Unsettles all of us. And I think if we just remind ourselves, per se, that it's just a piece of cloth, we will be more critical in our thinking, we'll be more willing to listen to the people around us, and we'll be more willing to step back and see the big picture.
You want to close us out, Michelle?
Oh, I thinking about this whole discussion, you know, makes me think about how possibly the fact that there is such tensions that are, you know, there are these tensions that arise in even discussing Obamacare, that somehow the debate over Obamacare necessitates Obamacare in a sense. You know, it's like the stress level of a nation is what influences our
health.
We need to talk healthcare, bro. That's so true.
So anyways, I mean, I think, you know, just a closing statement on my end is just that health is a part of all of our lives, which I said before. I think the fact that the government is talking on it is only natural, I think, honestly, because they do think about the welfare of their citizens. But I think perhaps it's just an issue we all need to be open to learn more about. And you know, as you said, Charlottesville is doing a good job about that. I hope this continues and expands into other cities.
It must be other cities doing this as well. What do you think, Bernard?
I wanted...
Sure.
Whatever the word is on the Daniel's point.
Piggybacker.
Yeah.
Often when I watch Law and Order, I always think it's fascinating how the characters are trying to win cases
mm-hmm.
versus bring actual justice.
Yeah.
I see that same thing when you're saying, like, we're fighting about who's winning versus the overarching theme, which is health.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't have time to get to it right now, but I think that'll tag on to something later when we get into education. Just it's good to be competitive to a point where you're like, yeah, we're being competitive because we want to become better. But when you're making everyone competitive against one another in order to always win, this, you know, Daniel, talk about this language. Why are we always trying to, we need to win against China and we need to win against the world. I'm like, what are we winning? What is the prize? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's about thinking and about language and how you think about the words you're saying and what these concepts mean, because then we will then start to move towards things like actual health. You'll have bills in, you know, the Senate and Congress that are actually written. It's like, oh, wait, what are we saying here? Oh, we actually want people to be healthy. We're not just trying to, like, pass some bill, you know, that, you know, satisfies some generic language. So that's I just wanted to add on to his point.
The reasonable voices in the studio with me today are technical support creative catalyst and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today and recommending us to all your friends. This has been The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, hoping you'll become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.
With no strings attached, no looking back, a new man is what you're looking at, giving up everything.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough raps. Yo, where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddled. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle, so they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise a debt ceiling.
Oh.